It's Jim, it's the World of Bonds. It's Friday, the 1st of July, 2022. Pinch punch, first day of the month. This is for professional investors only. Never ever investment advice. And happy Tour de France Day for those who celebrate. Kicks off in Copenhagen today. Sadly, without Mark Cavendish, who didn't get selected. So didn't get the chance to go for breaking Eddie Merckx's record for stage wins at the Tour. But should be a good one. Looking forward to it. Hard to see past Pogacar to win another Tour de France victory. Jim Reid's Deutsche Bank half one summary is out this morning of what went up, what went down in financial markets over the course of the past 6 months as we move into the second half. You won't be surprised to hear it was the worst H1 for the S&P 500 in about 60 years, and wait for it, the first H1 in US Treasury bond markets since 1788. Which was before George Washington became President of the United States. So the result of that means that if you had a 60-40 portfolio, you had the worst returns that you've seen in the history of, in history, 60-40, 60% equities, 40% bonds, down 16% in the first half of this year so far. Remember, they're meant to kind of counterbalance each other so that when one goes up, the other goes down, and that diversification produces good long-term returns. Not true over shorter time periods, and certainly not true in the first half of this year. It is a better start to H2, though, for fixed income markets. Well, government bond markets. Equities are down overnight again. But the 10-year US Treasury bond yield is 2.97. That's 5 basis points better, taking it back down below 3% for the first time in a while. So good news for US Treasuries after a hideous start to 2022. But as with equities, credit is doing very, very badly. Crossover went through 600 basis points yesterday. And one sector in particular is getting incredibly beaten up, and that's commercial property. Commercial property bonds in particular, those issued by REITs, real estate investment trusts, which is the structure that many European property firms have adopted. And it really started with Adler, which is a German commercial property company that's trading. I think the story is out this morning that it might restructure in some way or default, but certainly in a bad place. And that idiosyncratic story has spread throughout the rest of the sector, really. So in the past few days, most of the kind of REIT bond issuers are down many, many points. So as an example, Hammerson, which is a predominantly UK-based property company that many of you will know, its 2028 bonds, going back to the start of January, they yielded 3.5%. Today, they're yielding nearly 8.5%. So heading up towards the kind of distressed level, around 1,000 basis points spread. But most of that damage, or a lot of that damage, has been done over the course of the past month. So they've got, you know, that yield has gone up from 5.75% to 8.5%. But it's not just it's not just Adler, it's not just Hammerson. Names like SBB, Vonovia, Unibail, Kachina, I'm pronouncing all of those wrong. They are European companies, and my language skills are poor. But you know, the weakness in credit is particularly prominent in that sector. But weakness in credit it is across the board, really, at the moment. And one thing that is worth noting is that an implication of that is that cash prices have fallen well below par in many cases. Remember, you know, we've been in a 30-year bull market for fixed income. And as bond yields fall year after year, the coupons that new issues are issued at have fallen in line with that. So that means that if you issued a corporate bond 5 years ago or even 10 years ago, its coupon will have until recently looked historically incredibly high. So for instance, you might get a 4 or 5% coupon still out there with bond yields now and credit down at 2%, for instance. As a result of that, obviously mathematically, if bond yields are low, but you can get a 4 or 5% coupon or even a 3% coupon, that means that the price of the bond will trade significantly above par. And it hasn't been uncommon over the past years to see corporate bonds with prices up in the 120s, even 150s. And that produces a bit of a danger for a corporate bond fund manager in a way, because we know that the average recovery rate on corporate bonds is something like 40 cents in dollar, and that those recoveries are often based around the par value of bonds. So when corporate bonds are trading exceptionally high and above par, that produces additional risk. So in the event of default, let's say you have a choice between a bond trading at 100 or 150, they might both get recovered at 40, and that means you lose a lot more money in the high-priced bonds. Now, obviously, in the course of 2022, significantly rising bond yields, as we saw from that George Washington example of a horrible start to the year, has meant that many corporate bonds, especially those issued in the last couple of years, are now trading well below par. And so that reduces risks for fund managers. You know, if you've got something trading at 80 and recovery is 40, that's obviously better than losing from 150 to down to 40. So you have the asymmetry moves into your favour as a bond fund manager. But it also means that if you're a cash rich corporate, you might be thinking about doing what's called a liability management exercise. And this is where you decide to buy back your bonds at 70 or 80 cents in the dollar, whereas your liability on your balance sheet is effectively at 100. So a few will be thinking about that. You know, if you genuinely are a CEO who thinks that your long-term prospects are fantastic, that you've got liquidity and so forth, you should be thinking about buying back your bonds and recognising, you know, some gains onto your balance sheet. I did see a JP Morgan note on this morning that said, to quote, "We think it would be quite bold for issuers to..." What's that say? I can't read my own handwriting. To consume, that's the word. "We think it'd be quite bold for issuers to consume liquidity in order to realise a one-off gain, especially as market access remains elusive." So, you know, this is the big issue. Liquidity in markets isn't particularly strong. It's incredibly weak at the moment. So market access is low. So if you are buying back your bonds, you're spending some cash that you may not be able to borrow again in markets very easily in the near future. Apologies for a complete handwriting fail there. Final thing I'd like to mention today is the Supreme Court in the United States. And I think it's something we should be getting very, very worried about in terms of the US's standing in the world, the idea that democracy is being subverted, the rule of law, the ideas of fairness and freedom and democracy and all of those sorts of things. I don't think it's too hysterical to say that those things are now under consideration and will become under consideration for international investors, and may well hit the dollar, may hit the credit worthiness of the US and all of those sorts of things. So, you know, it's not just Roe versus Wade that's being rolled back, not just restrictions on gun control that's being rolled back. But yesterday we had the Supreme Court take power away effectively from the EPA, that's the Environmental Protection Agency, to require America effectively to reduce carbon emissions. And so they have said this should be all down to states, shouldn't be down to Joe Biden or the Capitol in any way to determine that. Global warming, effectively, they don't see as that big a deal, and companies effectively should feel able to produce energy at the lowest cost. And this is down to states. It isn't something that central government, federal government, should have any control over. So incredibly bad news for the world's net zero ambitions, but also a sign that things are getting incredibly nasty in US politics, and that there is a fear, I think, that we're going into a bad place there. Anyway, on that cheerful note, have good weekends, enjoy the Tour de France, and speak to you next week. Bye.